This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Doctor in the House series, which only means it's a Friday afternoon. And on the line with me, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist. How are you, George? You look terribly bright. I can see you all bright and chirpy in your office. Are you at the
glowing
office?
I'm Yeah. No. Things change, right? Even though we're on, virtual world, but it's still raining outside. It's probably just traffic jam in Klang Valley. And also, you know, Malaysia still face an unusual problem of non-communicable diseases, which is what we're going to talk about today, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019, that was just released very recently, right? And I think even before that came out, George, and with this whole COVID-19 thing, and we saw people who were mostly affected and who didn't survive COVID-19, most of whom had comorbidities. And that included a lot of non-communicable diseases, people who had diabetes, people who had hypertension, people who had cardiovascular problems, all of whom did not survive COVID-19 because of NCDs. And that's when I thought, wow, we really need to do something about NCDs in this country. We've been talking about this to death for the last 12 years. And still, all we see are numbers going up dramatically. And it's absolutely shocking. Just to go through, right? Number of diabetics in this country is almost 5% higher than in 2015. One in five of us has diabetes. George, you were almost pre-diabetic, which got you losing a ton of weight. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Well, luckily I don't fall into that high-risk category with the COVID, right? Because otherwise I'll be worrying myself to death. You're absolutely right. I've been looking forward in a way to find out how we're doing with the National Health and Morbidity Survey. I printed it all out, digested it. I came to this two, three, four, five statistics. One in two of us are obese. One in three of us have high blood pressure. One in four of us have cholesterol problem. And one in five of us have diabetes problem. Isn't that a really, really depressing read?
It is. Absolutely. I mean, just look around the room. Out of 10, that means one in three of us has hypertension. I don't know. Anyway, joining us on the line today is Dr. T. E. Siong. He's president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia. How are you, Dr. T? It's been a long time since we caught up with you.
Indeed, so I miss going to your studio,
We will make do with video calls for now. But how did you ride out the MCO, Dr. T? You're in the older group, age bracket. You were in a higher risk group. How did you cope with it?
I was very takut, actually, very coward. I have not been out much. And I only been out three times in the last 3 months. So I took it very cautiously. And this is really something else, And with what Dr. George mentioned about comorbidities and obesity. And I'm in the seven decade series. So really, I am very cowardly on this one. So I'm doing okay, I suppose. And taking very, very heavy precautions needed. Yes.
Okay.
I think my healthy nutrition helps.
I'm sure it has. Well, we can count on you to be eating healthy only because, when I was looking at the results of the National Health and Morbidity Survey, only 95% of us, Dr. T, 95% of us do not eat the recommended daily amount of both fruit and vegetables. Are you not surprised that these are the results of our National Health and Morbidity Survey?
Yeah, actually, you're right. I'm not surprised. And I've worked for 40 years as a trying to become a nutritionist. And as I go along every decade, it becomes more and more depressing. So if you're talking about 12 years, I'm talking about 40 years, So it is not expected, this kind of NHMS results, but really, we have been talking about this for three decades at least, and Actually, I think we really have to do something about it. We can talk and talk until the cows come home, but we have to do something about it, yes.
You know, did you not realize, you know, there's a map on the number of us who actually eat fruit and veg, you know, George, did you see that in one of the outcomes of the key findings? You'll find that it's worse in Sabah. It's worse in Perak and Johor. Everybody else, the healthiest people, I mean, who are actually eating more than 97% of the population who are consuming fruits and veg are Sarawak, Pahang, Terengganu, Kelantan, George. That's your state.
Yeah, that's my side because I was thinking that we're eating way too much carbohydrate. Well, for change, we're doing something right. Dr. T, just for the interest of the listeners, can you just elaborate what exactly is the recommended portions of fruit and vegetables?
Oh, actually, quite easy. We try to put it like simple 3+2, so at least 5. 3 servings of vegetables, 2 servings of fruits. So we also have, for a long time, trying to tell people, what's a serving of a veggie? What's a serving of a fruit? Veggie is very simple. 1 cup of uncooked veggie, let's say spinach, chop it up, uncooked, you know, in a cup, normal cup. Or boiled spinach, 1/2 cup of it. 1 serving of banana, 1 serving of fruit is like 1 medium-sized banana. That's it. So 3 serving of veggie, 2 serving of fruits. That's it. Minimum.
In a day.
Requirement. In a day.
Okay.
Logical, but 95% of us are not doing that. Is that true or is that just a statistical skew?
It is true. If you look at data in HMS 2011, 2015, and now 2019, it's going up. And it's like 80, 90s kind of a region. You know, we have been talking about this for a long time, and I think the Malaysian public have not come to realize that veggies and fruits are part of the dietary pattern. They think that these are things that if we have the chance, we eat it. If not, it doesn't matter because it's not protein, it's not fat, it's not carbohydrate. People think of foods like meat, veggies, and eggs. And so veggie is like grass, the lowly grass, you know. So people tend to ignore that. I think one of the reasons for many of the cancers and heart disease is lack of plant foods, veggies, and dietary fiber. Many of the cancers, colon cancer, for example, lack of fiber, lack of plant-based food is one of the main reasons for many of these. So we have to get back to putting more importance to vegetables.
You would have seen many cycles of the National Health and Morbidity Survey, Dr. T. What are your thoughts on where we are today? Why do you think more and more of us are averse to vegetables?
Yeah, so when I started working in the Institute of Medical Research, 1980s, at that time, it was still a lot of some parts of undernutrition. And then I started working in the 70s and 80s, the pattern seemed to change. More hypercholesterolemia came in, high blood sugar came in, and the first morbidity survey was done in 1990s. Then they have every 10 years, 95, 2005. After that, they realized that it is too long. Every 10 years, too long a cycle. So they did 5 years, 2011, 2015, 2019. So the data keep on, I mean, the bad data keep on going up and up. And well, there are many, many reasons put up for this. And complacency among the people is one of them, and lack of belief that nutrition is the key to health. I think lack of awareness of people. People know that health is important, eating too much fat is bad. But when they come to eating in front of the buffet line, they stand in front of the buffet line with all the temptation, they just lost every control that they have, I suppose.
Do you not think, Dr. T, that this eating habits are formed when you're young?
Certainly, Mira, certainly. So the Nutrition Society has been talking a lot about promoting healthy eating to the school children, for example. To kindergartens will be best, but it will be very challenging to do that. So we have placed a lot of importance on promoting healthy eating, active living to school-age children. We really feel that that is terribly important. If we do that now, so we have a healthier Malaysians 20 years from now. If we don't do anything now, NHMS in 20 years from now will be really horrendous. Will be very, very difficult to control. Dr. George.
Clearly, you mentioned that you've seen so many cycles of these, the National Health and Mobility Survey, right? Okay. I mean, we are doing something wrong because we're heading the wrong direction. If you were to date back to when it first came out, let's say if you can advise us to do something differently, what do you think can change, you know, if we can turn back the clock and then, you know, trying to change this whole course of detrimental progression?
I think when the data start coming up, 95, 2006 and all that, the ministry was aware of this. Ministry was aware, and we started National Plan of Action number one in 1996. So second NPAN 2016, and then now we have third NPAN. So national plans are there. So they have mapped out a lot of details on what to do, by which agency, what are the focus, what are the strategies, down to programs, down to action plans, down to activities, by who. So I would not say we have not planned all this, but maybe we didn't put all those into action. So if you ask me what we would have done better, no, we would have do the same thing, map out the problems, see who are the most affected, what are the interventions needed, the strategies, and so on. So I think the problem is not that we have not done the planning we have, but we have not implemented the plan sufficiently. I feel that is the main crux of the problem.
We'll come back and find out why these plans haven't been implemented successfully. We're discussing the nutrition in Malaysia based on the outcome of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, on the line together with Dr. T.E. Siong, president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia. If you have a question for us, WhatsApp us on 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Doctor in the House series, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist on the line with me, together with Dr. T.E. Siong, president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia. We are discussing nutrition in Malaysia as a result of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019 that was released just last month. Let me just give you a quick update on the numbers. Diabetes, we have about 1 in 5 of us who are diabetic. That's an increase from 5% from 2015. 1 in 2 adults in Malaysia is either overweight or obese. 1 in 3 of us has hypertension. 4 in 10 of us have high cholesterol. 1 in 4 of us is not physically active. And 95% of us don't eat the recommended daily amount of fruit and veg. Now, doesn't that sound exciting? We are... I don't know how to describe ourselves. I'd love to give ourselves a name, honestly, based on this. You know what? We're in dire need of some sort of intervention. I don't know what sort of intervention, but earlier on you spoke about the National Plan of Action for Nutrition, which has been the master plan to address under and over nutrition problems in the country since 1996, Dr. T. What have been some of the challenges in the implementation of these programs? You were saying the programs are all there, but implementation has not been successful. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we were planning for National Plan number 3, 2016. So we, at the end of 2015, so we review back what did we do, what have we achieved, what have we not achieved. And we missed targets for several things. Several things may not be a right word. Anyway, so we looked at what went wrong and we identified, if you remember, but it's also documented in NPAN 3. One of it is lack of intersectoral collaboration. That means that actually nutrition is not just a problem for Ministry of Health to tackle. Obesity is not just for Ministry of Health to tackle. Many other ministries must play a role. So we always talk about all government approach, agriculture, for example, education, social welfare. These are very important agencies. So we identify that one of the important lack of this effectiveness is lack of priority by other ministries, other stakeholders. So lack of intersectoral collaboration is one very important thing that we really need to beef up. And I still see that lacking a few years down after, and pantry is being implemented. Number two was lack of resources, financial resources. Well, things that don't just happen. We don't get money dropping out from the sky, of course. So we need to invest in money for implementing the various programs. Otherwise, they just remain nice on papers and on the shelves of people after having launched them. So really need to have dedicated funds to implement the many, many things identified. School programs, we talk about school programs, we need those. Third is another human resources. Very important, I feel. What does that mean? It means enough nutritionists to go around to the country and talk about promoting healthy nutrition, active living to the people. Otherwise, the people do not know that there's such a thing as such a species called nutritionists, you know? So we really have to spread the word that come and talk to the nutritionists, find out very simple things. So there must be enough nutritionists properly qualified all across the country. They are the ones who is going to talk to the people, engage with the people, and spread the message. We cannot always rely on Putrajaya or Kuala Lumpur to do all that. We need to have people all over the country, and nutritionists must be at the forefront of promoting healthy eating, and prevention of diseases must be the way.
We have just a WhatsApp message from someone who says, I've been in Malaysia for 6 years now, and when I travel around Asia or Southeast Asia, I am shocked to see that compared to other countries in the region, Malaysia has a serious issue with obesity. My Malaysian friends or colleagues have an aversion to fruit. The only fruit they eat is durian. Truth be told, the national dish of Malaysia, I'm not going to mention names, is a certain type of fried chicken. Mamat stalls are empty, but these fried chicken outlets are, you know, the queues are, you know, spilling outside. So there you go. We've got one sort of WhatsApp coming through. If you have, you'd like to contribute to the conversation, the WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. George?
Yeah, well, this is the problem, you see. The listener highlighted something against you. Your enemy, Dr. T, who obviously is advocate for good food, is the all that good food out there, right? All the they are readily available and they are cheap. How do we combat that? And no matter how many national plan actions, how many rules and regulations, we can't avoid the fact that there are abundance of food, there are abundance of tasty food that may not be so good for your health.
And it's cheap, and it's cheap, right?
And it's cheap, yeah. So I think Dr. Lee, you got a very important point here. I got to address. We put a lot of action on food industry. They have high fat foods. We blame them for the high sugar, high cholesterol, high sodium. But we forgot that many Malaysians eat out there in the many restaurants, mama stalls. Everywhere you go in this country, you see food stalls, you know. You cannot avoid bumping into one. So there you are. All these foods may not be controlled. People do not reach out. The regulators, the healthcare professionals do not reach out to these other food providers that are not regulated at all. What about sugar in these kinds of foods, the fat in this kind of food, the sodium in these kinds of foods? So we are not controlling this. And Malaysians love to eat. We all talk about that just a short while ago. But it doesn't mean that we can't enjoy all those lovely foods. What many Malaysians lack is discipline. We love durian. I love durian, but I don't eat durian every other day or every other week. Or I don't eat nasi lemak big plate like every other day or every other week. Some people eat nasi lemak every day or 10 times a week, you know. So that's a problem. We don't know how to discipline ourselves, and portion size is thing that we really should control. We cannot say don't eat this and don't eat that. You won't get very far doing that. But it's how to control the portion size and the frequency of eating. That may be the way to go, but we really have to keep on drumming into people that eat. Nutrition is important. Please pay attention.
You know, I have a... during the MCO, we ran out of bread. Can you remember in the early days of the MCO, we couldn't find bread anywhere. Bread makers flew off the shelf. Bread flour flew off the shelf. I couldn't find yeast anywhere because people were baking their own bread because we had a shortage of bread. And, you know, my analogy as to why everybody was eating more bread is because our nasi lemak outlets and our little stalls were all closed. We couldn't get roti canai for breakfast. There's so many our usual habits of eating. You know, what has become staple to Malaysians for breakfast was no longer available. So everyone ate bread because we didn't know what else to eat. So, I mean, and I am. Do you think punitive action should be put in place for strict control measures? Dr. T, I've come to a stage we need to be cruel to be kind, or this country is going to bleed financially and literally. Sorry, George.
Mira has got her rotan out already.
Okay.
Right. So do you think rotan is going to be the useful way forward?
My immediate answer is no. So if you have the rotan, who are you going to cane? I will ask that question first. Who are you going to use the rotan on? You're going to cane the person, the packaged food with the high sugar, with the high sodium, with the high cholesterol. That I just mentioned that many people don't rely on that a lot. So actually, many people eat street food a lot, restaurant food a lot, and the tax and the rotan, the punitive measures, are not going to touch them. That is why I say it may not work, because they won't be touched. The mama store will have the fat, the sodium, and as long as people love it. So punitive measures will not work. I would argue for some carrot instead. Oh. I love carrots.
Did you say carrot, Dr. T?
Yeah.
No.
At least you didn't say carrot cake.
No, I didn't.
You know, in order to get to the carrot, maybe we can start with the carrot cake. I don't know. Do you not think, Dr. T, that sugar is the biggest problem in this country?
Sure. One of the biggest problems is, but if you tax the soft drink, if you tax the food, the packaged food, what about the other drinks outside there? What about the kuih outside there? What about the pengat outside there? If you look at NHMS data, what does it say? Very few people take from the packaged drinks. And many, 50%, I think I remember the data, 50% of people take sugar from the self-made beverages. There you go. Self-made means what? They do at home, put into their coffee, their tea, their other drinks, put into their pengat, their bubur, and all those things, their kuih and so on. So if we tax on the drinks or on the prepackaged food, we are missing out a lot on the people, on the cakes, on the drinks that people make. What about the teh tarik? They won't be taxed. But the sugar is there, very high. So we have to really think, are we catching the right people with the sugar tax, for example?
Can we incentivize people to eat healthy, perhaps?
Yes. That's a good question, Dr. Lee. So we can. That's where the carrot comes in. Carrots have a lot of carotenoids, very healthy. So carrots, for example, you can also give the carrot to the manufacturers. You can give them carrot incentives to the company, tax reduction, for example. That's one way. The other way is carrot to the people. Maybe reduce their insurance premiums, for example. Have officers, make it compulsory for officers to have wellness programs for the staff. I love to see more companies having that. I get very few people writing to me asking for help in their wellness program. They do, but not so many. So have incentives or companies. If you have wellness programs, I give you incentives. Tax reduction, for example. Reduction on exercise machines, for example. Other equipment for exercise, for example. If you have a good cafe in your office, for example, I give you incentives. those kinds of things, we should really seriously look into. Don't just follow what other people do in other countries and tax. I don't see people. Some countries use tax not for health reasons, but for collecting revenue.
George?
Mira, I totally agree. I mean, Dr. T reminded me of an insurance company which remained unknown, but many of you would know that if you go to certain supermarket, they actually ask you for a card, and then every time you get these points, it gives you incentive and 10% discount on fruit and vegetables. I think it's such a great idea because technically, that really helped me a lot. I mean, earlier on in the beginning of the show, you mentioned that how I overcame my glucose intolerance problem, my obesity problems, and then I've lost about 20% of my whole bodily weight. I'm still sustaining it 2 years down the line against all my own perceptions of how I can do this. I really think that one of the issues is that I think carrots works. And I think, you know, in life, there are two ways of encouraging people to do something. One is a push factor. That sort of like fear and then, threats, the rotan. I think to Malaysians, somehow that doesn't work. And the pull factor somehow seems to work. And I will tell you towards the end of the show, what is the other pull factor that helps?
I'm coming to that because there is a part of the National Health and Morbidity Survey which relates directly to what George does. And we'll come to that in a short while. I've always felt, you know, with all these usage of our phones and, you know, paying with e-wallets and stuff because of COVID-19, if there is a way, any way of us going to stalls and saying, hey, if I ask for kurang manis, can you swipe something where that might translate to points and then maybe money, value that you could use someplace, you know? Those little things, I think, make a big difference, actually. It will be an incentive. Baby steps, I think. We can go ahead with that. I think in Singapore, they have it where if you ask for less salt, they have some sort of system in place as an incentive for you to want to eat less salt, at hawker places especially. George, just before I come back to you, we have another WhatsApp message that says, we cannot effectively regulate away poor diet choices. The causes underlying this epidemic may be deeply rooted in educational levels, socioeconomic status, and awareness of healthier lifestyles. I will totally agree. Socioeconomic status is a huge problem. Dr. T?
Yes, indeed. So, the person who WhatsApp, I think got it right. Education is one thing. So we have, I think Dr. Lee also mentioned about pull and push and pull factor. So we can supply what we want, but it's the demand of the consumer is very important. If the consumer demands less salt, less sugar, less fat, then the manufacturer, the vendor, the mama store will be happy to provide this, but the demand is not there. So we have to do two things. One is tackle the supply people, food supply people. One is tackle the consumers. We keep on educating them. So I always feel that we have not reached out to the Malaysians enough. That's one. And we need to keep on going. And your show is one example of how we can reach out to the people. More education all the time. And there are also people who know all this, but they don't practice all these things. So there are two groups of people out there. So what I'm saying is that education needs to be continued, intensive education all the time, not just a campaign here and there, one the month and after they're all quiet. That's not the way to go. It must be consistently there.
Okay, we'll come back. Also, there are about 3,000 community pharmacies in Malaysia. I mean, we talk about frontliners during COVID-19. These pharmacies, community pharmacies, can be frontliners in terms of, advocating healthy eating and how you can change your lifestyle generally. So we'll come back and find out more about education and how community pharmacies can play a role, nutritionists, for an example. But also, more importantly, we'll come back and find out about erectile dysfunction. There's been a section of the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019 that's dedicated to that problem. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday evening. That means Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, is on the line with me from his office. I can actually see him. He looks terribly bright. And are you sitting where the sun is happily glowing on your face, George? That, you know, it's perfectly. I had no choice. I just have to sit in a studio. I've got no control over where I sit. But you're looking great. On the line with me also, Dr. T. E. Siong, president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia. Dr. T. has been, you know, has seen so many national health and morbidity surveys being carried out since the 1990s. And I'm sure you must be very disappointed, Dr. T, that of 3 decades and we still haven't gotten anywhere in terms of getting our health in order. I mean, are you disappointed?
Of course I am. I really wish that we can do something, and the overweight obesity keep on rising. You know, the sharpest rise was in 1995, you know, and 1995, at that time, it shot up very high. Then it plateaued off, but it's still climbing a little bit. We see now it's 50% of Malaysians are overweight or obese. So I keep on wondering, what more can I do, or what can the Nutrition Society of Malaysia do? I still think that we really need to have more intersectoral collaboration and all government approach I alluded to just now. How about working with other people like the private sector? Are we not exploring that enough? I do see some reservation on the part of the government in working with the private sector, and maybe both sides are not too comfortable, but really we need to set aside the differences, lay on the table what can, cannot be done, and lay the limits, draw the line, and then go together and promote something. Promote fruit and vegetable intake, for example, yeah. When almost all everybody do not take. Fruit and vegetable is non-controversial. Push it. Everybody chip in, including milk companies, including bread. Everybody chip in, and a big campaign led by the Ministry of Health and Agriculture. Do I see Ministry of Agriculture putting a lot in effort in NPAN? No, I don't see that. So really, let's do this, and all government approach, all stakeholders, and then we have to do something different. We cannot keep on doing the same thing, and every cycle we can say, oh, the problem is very big there. We need to do more studies. We do not need more studies.
Yeah, Dr. T,
we need action.
Do you know what happened in 1995 when we saw a spike?
Oh, we don't know. At that time, the country, actually economic development picked up very fast at that time. Then we sort of plateaued off, you know.
Okay.
And I think that was one of the major push for economic affluence of the people.
Yeah, just generally, we became a more affluent. That's the downside of it. You know, George, you said, I'm taking out the rotan. We have Ravin here who's texted in to say, one's health is their CV when applying for a job or attending an interview. If you're unable to take care of your number one asset, which is your health, will you be able to do so for the company or its clients? So there you go. You thought I was bad, George.
Very good.
Okay, coming back to you, George. There is a section in the National Health and Morbidity Survey of 2019. And the reason I'm asking, George, is because this has everything to do with your lifestyle. 3 in 10 people have admitted that they have great difficulty with hardness, George. What is happening?
Right, okay. I mean, a lot of people, well, there are two things that I'm very impressed by this National Health and Morbidity Survey, is that number one is that it's broken down the taboo about sexual health and also mental health. There are 2 sections on depression and 1 section of erectile dysfunction. Clearly, it's something that will generate conversation. When it generates dialogue, it will generate awareness. The second part, which is a more important part, is that that is one of the pull factors for many men, because 1 in 3 men have erectile dysfunction, especially the younger age group, because they identify 37% of men age 18 to 29 have got erectile dysfunction. And the problem is that we know in urology and also sexual health medicine that men presented with erectile dysfunction at early age, basically it's a precursor of more serious condition such as cardiac disease. So essentially, if you think about it, the vessels that supplies the heart is significantly bigger than the vessels that supplies the penis. So when the penis one get blocked first due to atherosclerosis as a reason of hypertension, high cholesterol, and also diabetes, then it is the first sign of a problem. So a hard-on problem is a sign of a broken heart, really. So these are the group of patients that we can save effectively if we can generate conversations about men talking about erectile dysfunction, and they can go to see their doctors and subsequently get themselves checked out. A large majority of them will have problems with all these non-communicable diseases. And we can save these group of patients age 18 to 29 to prevent them from having problems 10 to 20 years down the line. So I really think it's a very important finding.
Also, if you're healthy, you wouldn't even fall in that one third in the 18 to 29 years of age now, would you?
Absolutely. So therefore, you know, if although sexual health is a taboo and it's always difficult to talk about, when we highlighted it this way, I really think that will encourage more people to seek help for the sake of their health and in order to prevent future.
Right. You know, George, this statistic says that over 60-plus-year-olds, 64.1% of them have ED. Now, in the past, would you not say there's a much higher number of them in that age group, and now it's like divided among the three age groups? You have 18 to 29, which is about 37% of men who have ED, 25.2% between the ages of 30 and 59. What was the spread in the past?
Yeah, it's very curious way. I mean, overall, in the previous studies, it's always highlighted that if you combine all the male populations together, you get around 52% of men presented with erectile dysfunction. So what is curious, particularly like what you highlighted, that there are two peaks in this group of findings. You know, you get the 37% in the younger age group, and then you get a more or less a plateau effect, because previously you get about 75% of men above 60 with erectile dysfunction. So we only get about 64%. I really think this is statistical. It doesn't really identify that older men have less of these problems. I think that is remaining stable. One of the issues about older men having the problem is no longer the issues about vasculature and the comorbidities that we talk about. The other issues is the testosterone. I think that will be that will reveal itself more and more in the future, when the role of testosterone keeping men healthy and young looking will be a key issue for the next 2 or 3 decades to come, because how the men's health is influenced by testosterone is a major frontline research at the moment that will highlight the health for men in the future.
Oh boy, George.
Oh.
Boys, get in shape. Start eating your vegetables.
That's what I was going to talk about my pull factor. As you know, 2 years ago, I reached my big, landmark in life of reaching 50. One of the ways to actually, making sure that you keep young is actually keep healthy, eat healthy. And then that is my carrot, you know, in order to don't age so fast, you really have to put in the effort to eat well and exercise more. Don't you think, Dr. T?
Yeah, sure. Like,
you know, yeah. Your 7 series, you look like a 3 series.
Wow. Oh, no. I should blanja you coffee sometime.
I mean, that's you have to return the compliment, Dr. T. He's waiting. He's waiting for that.
He's waiting.
I'm waiting for compliment here.
Yeah.
But no, George. I mean, I have to say, George. I'm going to say this for the millionth time. George looks fantastic compared to when he did 5 years ago.
Okay.
Complete change. Complete change. Food, exercise. It's showing. It shows. He's a walking example of how you can look younger, feel better, and be much healthier.
Indeed.
So you can be a role model for this. Go outside and...
I think there's no such thing as free lunch or free buffet, you know, no pun intended. However, you know, at some point, the realization that whatever we put in our mouth will subsequently end up as some sort of payback. I think until someone realize that, you really have to have mindfulness when you consume anything, because that is the key way forward. apart from moderations, you just need to be very mindful of your actions and also your lifestyle.
Okay. So if hardness issues isn't a motivator, I don't know, amongst the boys, I don't know what else is. You know, one of the other disturbing numbers was about 500,000 of Malaysians are depressed. That is really quite concern as well. I suppose we'll pick that up on another show. But coming back to nutrition, one in three of us has a very low health literacy level. How can we improve this education process, Dr. T?
Yeah, so we really, I spoke briefly earlier on, we really need to be consistent with our education messages. And we start off with a common dietary messages, and that the ministry is doing. They have dietary guidelines, which we share with doctors, with urologists as well, and we all say the same message. So that dietary guideline is there. We are reviewing the dietary guideline, but we have to get those guidelines out to the people. So we are not doing that enough. I feel that Nutrition Society is not doing enough. The ministry is not doing enough. And I come back to the schools. We start from the schools and teaching them routinely simple messages on nutrition. We have to put nutritionists in the schools. That will be the way to go. Nutritionists in the school is the way. And look at some countries which have nutritionists in every school. We may not start every school, but maybe a nutritionist in 5 schools, 10 schools, and look into nutrition. I think there's a very important investment that we cannot already overlook at this point in time. So you're really serious in nutrition education to the school. Put back the physical education to the schools. The school children are not exercising. So put back to them. Then we overcome the overweight obesity problem. So all these things must start, and nutrition education must go on continuously. We must, of course, I also realize that there must be attractive messages using various new media and so on. Yeah, we have younger nutritionists with us, and I'm very pleased with the new Nutrition Society members and council members. They're doing a lot of work.
Dr.
to the social media.
Don't you think NGOs play a role? Do you not also think that teachers play a more crucial role in school rather than just dietitians and nutritionists, because there are only so many nutritionists you're going to have in the country? Teachers
yes.
play a huge role.
Indeed, certainly. So when I say teaching the children, I don't mean nutritionists go and teach them, but we pass on the modules to the teachers. The teachers teach them. The nutritionists are there to activate, to motivate the teachers and the students, and do a lot of fun things with the teachers. I certainly agree. PTAs play a big role. And look at canteen. We talk about canteen for 40 years since I started work. It's a shame. PTAs play a big role in school canteens. They can be the monitor, the watchdog for school canteens.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, what our priorities are amongst PTAs as well. Canteen food is hardly on top of the agenda. Dr. Chiok is saying personal tax incentives or reduction of insurance premiums can be given to Malaysians with a BMI that's less than 25 or a waist-to-hip ratio of lower than 1. What do you think? Personal tax incentives, that will be fantastic.
Yeah, because that was one of them.
That will translate to lower healthcare costs, you know, in us paying out for, you know, healthcare bills. That's just going to be skyrocketing while we get our act together, if we ever get our act together. Community pharmacists do play a role, Dr. T, don't you think?
Yeah, they do play a role. I will be just be cautious. Some of the pharmacies that I see are just pushing supplements. If they can also chip in with healthy dietary messages. I still go back to my nutritionist to be all over the country, be all to the kampung and the various corners of the country. I would love to see more of them and see them doing a lot of work in promoting healthy eating messages.
Your take on supplements, Dr. T?
Not everyone needs supplements. So we really have to have proper advice who needs supplements and what form of supplements do they take and what time do they need supplements. Some people do need supplements, but I don't see that happening. I see a lot of supplements being pushed by sold by people who do not even know the difference between vitamin A and vitamin B12. So that is very worrying.
Okay.
That people are wasting a lot of money.
You want to just remind us a little bit about Suku Suku Sparrow? Muhammad Shani Abdullah has reminded us that we should remind everybody about Suku Suku Sparrow.
Sure. That's a good one. He's a believer of Suku Suku Sparrow. I love that too. So we have a food pyramid, which guides us on the daily intake. But the Suku Suku Sparrow is the plate, which is visible to the person, guides us on the plate that we, the meal that we're taking at that time. Half of it should be vegetables and fruits. And the other half should be vegetable and the meat. And the suku is the rice. So the rice, we are now overeating on rice. So the Suku Suku and the Sparrow, yeah. So okay, that is the tool that we can use for people to really portion out what's the most important food to take, cut down on rice and go on vegetables and fruit, and 1/4 on the meat products.
George, your message on nutrition in Malaysia.
Mira, you know, with this COVID-19, I think a lot of people hopefully will have realization. Dr. T, maybe for the next 4 years, we will put away the rotan and then we'll take out the carrots. You never know, 4 years from today, we'll see some improvements on the figures and also a little bit of improvement on that hardness.
Yo, I'm just going to bank on this hardness thing to change people's eating habits. Come on, guys. 3 in 10 of you have ED. 1/3 of you in the age bracket of 18 to 29 years have erectile dysfunction. Come on, get healthy. Thank you very much for joining us. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. T.E. Siong, president of the Nutrition Society of Malaysia, speaking to us about nutrition in Malaysia in relation to the National Health and Morbidity Survey 2019 on The Bigger Picture, BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.